it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 327. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Well, it's your Gabe Kapler emergency pod. We have been talking about this for a couple of weeks. We thought it was going to happen last week or earlier this week, but finally, on day 11 of Kapler Watch, the Phillies have made a decision, and they've decided to relieve Gabe Kapler of his duties as manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. And joining me to talk about it is Justin Clue from Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. And Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Justin, let me come to you first. This is all happening. It's actually here. I don't think at this point we either of us really cared one way or the other way. We just wanted a resolution on this, and we got it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And this certainly was one, not the one I was necessarily expecting at this point. I know we're going to dive into the ins and outs of this and Kapler's time in Philadelphia. There's just a lot of ways to kind of feel about it. Everything continues to feed into everything else. And, you know, it's a decision that doesn't honestly make as much sense as it could on its own when not coupled with other moves the Phillies could have also made. So, I'm sure we're going to get into all that. I'm just flabbergasted by the fact that this news came out and kind of dominated our local news cycle to the point that no one really talked about the fact that a pitcher for the Padres broke into a house through a dog door and got tasered. And
I didn't even see that.
Nobody was talking about that.
No, I didn't see that.
No, my timeline, I mean, and I follow a fair amount of fans from different teams, and I saw like a good 5 to 10 minutes of this, and then it was gone. It was more like Kapler, Kapler, Kapler all the time.
It looks like, Liz, that this Padres pitcher, this gentleman, picked the right day for this to go down. So sometimes the timing of life really works out for you. What's your reaction? We are going to get into this, Liz, but when you heard the news come down, what was your reaction?
I was glad that it had come to an end. I was surprised. I really thought that after all this time, after 11 days, how could they fire him? Because that's... You would think that if it was about only on-field results, it would be fairly simple. He didn't get it done. So, yeah. What took him so long? We won't know until Friday when they have they're having a press conference, a full 24 hours after they made the announcement.
Yeah, Thanks, guys.
What's 24 more hours after?
Honestly.
After 77?
Like, I realized that in the story... I realize that in the story of the tortoise and the hare that the tortoise does win the race, but goodness gracious. I mean, it's like, I guess, yeah, you're right. We waited 11 days. What's a 12th day before we figure out exactly and hear exactly why this went down the way it went down? But the Phillies finally pulled the trigger after a 161 and 163 record over two seasons. Gabe Kapler is out as the Phillies manager. And here's the deal with Kapler. I was surprised also that he was let go. I think right after the season, I was sure that he was going to get fired, and then it just kept getting delayed and getting delayed and getting delayed. And the longer it went on, it seemed like they were trying to find an excuse to keep him. But, you know, everything we're hearing from Jim Salisbury, who's been reporting on this, and he did his At the Yard podcast, that Kapler didn't find out until Wednesday night when Klentak and McPhail and Middleton flew out to Los Angeles to tell him in person. But apparently Middleton was flying all over the country talking to different players. I mean, it's just a completely backwards way of handling this whole situation. But in the end, Kapler is out as Phillies manager, and we're going to get into who might replace him. We'll get into the rest of the coaching staff. We're going to get in also to some Matt Klentak stuff, because I think it's interesting that he's going to be quote-unquote leading the search, according to the Phillies press release that came out the announcement.
Makes no sense.
No, we're going to get into all that because it doesn't make any sense. But let's talk about Kapler, and let's just kind of put a bow on his 2 years in Philadelphia.
Let us, please.
For me, Liz, I don't think the city ever got over the opening day blunder. You know, it was always a weird match to begin with because he's a laid back California guy. He had the social life blog that was kind of that people in Philadelphia made fun of. And, you know, he didn't have any managerial experience. So he was also a newbie coming into the job. So we were placing a lot of faith that Matt Klentak knew what he was doing when he brought Gabe Kapler aboard here. And From the very first game, his very first game as a Phillies manager, when he pulled Aaron Nola early with a 5-0 lead and the game blew up and they lost 8-5 on opening day, I really don't think the fan base ever got over that first impression that Kapler left, and I think it stayed with him until his very last day as a Phillies manager.
I think it was a tough sell to begin with, to be honest. He was young and very shiny. And tan and just different. He was different. He's just a very different guy.
He was very different.
And, you know, I don't hate him. How could I? He's a human person. He's a nice man. I've met him once, and he was a nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't necessarily mean I you know, that doesn't reconcile necessarily with the things that we have heard that he did with the Dodgers and his poor decision-making here. But I don't hate him. I'm just glad he's moving on. It just never felt like it was going to work. He was not the right manager. And I think that's a lot of that might have to do with personality. And I don't even know. I mean, basing it solely on what the fans think is real dumb. But he never really seemed to fit. Even subtracting the fans from the situation, it just never seemed to work.
Well, and Justin, I don't think you necessarily, I really don't think Middleton made this decision to appease the fans. I think he looked at the situation, and my guess is he kind of came to the same conclusion that I have come to about Gabe Kapler. I don't think Kapler was a quote-unquote bad manager, but I also didn't see a lot of positives to point to either. You know, I think a lot of the things that went wrong with the Phillies over the last couple of years were happening above him, and some of the things that were happening below him were going wrong too. Players didn't perform well. I think he and Matt Klentak saddled themselves with two position coaches, hitting and pitching coaches, that did him no favors. But I think at the end of the day, it just might be like, given where this team is right now, where they are in this rebuilding cycle, this building cycle, I guess I should say, that having a manager in there with very little to no managerial experience and with the personality that he had that just did not match the city at all, he was just not the right guy for this particular job right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say it with the gift of hindsight, and you're going to see a lot of Terry Francona comparisons.
A lot of those.
Even though we have no idea what the future holds for Gabe Kapler. That's just a haunting tale that has stuck with Phillies fans since Francona has had his success. I mean, it's just... it comes down to kind of what you said. Everything, you know, I keep saying this is all connected, and there's so many different thoughts and concerns that kind of go into this decision and would have gone into the decision to keep him as well. This creates more questions, I guess. And what I keep coming back to is, not necessarily a bad manager, but also what did he give you to hang on to?
Right.
You know, what is it that I've seen people today really saying that Gabe Kapler was a good manager. Gabe Kapler was a smart manager. Gabe Kapler is a good person. And it's just like, in some cases, we have direct evidence to the contrary for these things. And I'm not sure what the evidence is in favor of them. You know, you don't want to. You should be able to say something like that without being like, well, you hate Gabe Kapler. Like, Liz, you shouldn't have to defend yourself for saying I don't hate Gabe Kapler just because you don't think he was the right manager. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I feel like he wasn't. And, you know. Yeah, that moment with Hobby Milner really set things off on the wrong path for him. But, like, this team makes the playoffs. That team makes the playoffs. That all just becomes a funny story.
Right.
And it's not the thing that ruined him from day one. So, you know, there's a lot of ways this could have gone, and not all of them were his fault. But this doesn't necessarily spell disaster, but it does raise a lot of questions. And, you know, I know people on this podcast, including me, were kind of ready to see the Gabe Kapler experiment come to an end. And I won't deny that. That certainly was the case in my head. But, you know, now that he's gone, it does make you wonder, you know, what if?
Yeah.
He
and
had
I
a very winning personality.
He did.
And very friendly, very outgoing. He appears always to be very calculated while always appearing to be very upfront with you. I would love to sit down with him at a point, you know, and just his personality is very fascinating to me because it's just so, how many of us know someone like him?
Oh, but he's extremely unique. And the thing about Kapler
is, he's like an alien.
Well, I think the thing about Kapler that maybe makes him alien-like is I think in this business with managers like that, there's a lot of managers that don't take criticism well. And I think Kapler was somebody who took criticism pretty well. He was a guy who acknowledged shortcomings. He just might not have been able to fix some of the shortcomings that that he had. But, you know, I think, you know, when he was called on some things, it wasn't all the time, but I think he generally speaking, tried to own up to some mistakes. I mean, I'm sad that it didn't work out because, you know, Kapler came on this podcast a couple of times. He's the only manager who ever did and probably ever will come on this podcast because he's a different kind of guy, you know. But at the same time, it wasn't the right fit. It wasn't the right fit for what this team needed. This team, I think we didn't realize exactly how much this team needed an experienced hand in the manager's office. And everything you're hearing from Jim Salisbury and a lot of the other beat writers is that it was the clubhouse was just, it was left too much up to the players. There was not enough guidance. Yeah. And I think there was a lack of a sense of urgency with this team at different points over the last couple of years. There needs to be somebody in there that the players can kind of, I don't know, that to bring it all together and not leave so much up to the players to police themselves. And I think that as much as anything else is why Kapler isn't coming back.
You know, I kind of disagree on the I think visibly on the surface he did accept criticism well, but you know, the claims that he was open, he wanted this open-minded approach and that he would accept when things weren't working and be open to trying new paths. You know, I don't think we saw that as much as that sort of branding of himself indicated we would. I feel like there was much more adherence to what he was there to do, what the front office was dictating him to do. I feel like that will come to define this brief era of Philly's managing. But as far as him getting criticized, I mean, I feel like there were, you just get the impression there were some insecurities there. I think that was the case here, that maybe visibly he was able to accept criticism and let it roll off his back. But I think he was a hell of a PR person and he's his own PR person. So I think he's going to give you an answer that may not mean anything, but it's going to sound pretty OK. And we've also had it reported that the Phillies really are sensitive to how they're being perceived right now. And I think Kapler is part of that. I mean, this is his team. This was his team. This is Klentak's team. This is Andy McPhail's team. They're the guys who kind of have unfortunately defined this era right now rather than the players. And if we're saying the Phillies care about how they're perceived, then, you know, that's going to come down to those central figures. That's going to come down to a lot of Middleton, I think, but also that front office and the guy who was managing. So, you know, this is just me getting an impression based on how far, you know, watching from far away. But that was my take watching this, is that, you know, he's a guy that didn't enjoy being criticized but was able to hide it. But I mean, you know, who enjoys being criticized? I did see it also. I want to mention this. Is Scott Lauber's write up about this? He mentioned in Kapler's attempts to connect with the fans, which, you know, hey. More power to you, buddy. Like that's a hell of an undertaking. But at one point, he apparently, according to Scott Lauber, was toying with the idea of town hall meetings to discuss the team. Which,
oh my god!
Oh man!
Well, it seemed like something like that was going to start happening with the Good Fight. I mean, we got this one manager's mailbag before he was let go. That's kind of making a little bit more sense now
Desperation. It's like cartoon stink waves of desperation wafting off of every single idea. Wow.
I'll have to read that Lauber piece because I missed that part of it. But so, I mean, look, I think everybody's ready for a manager to come in here who has experience, and everything we're hearing is that that's the direction the Phillies want to go with their next manager. And we'll get into some potential possibilities coming up in just a couple minutes. But I want to talk a little bit about what we saw from the press release and kind of the process moving forward now, because I think there are, you know, a lot of the Gabe Kapler defenders out there are pointing to the fact that calling him a scapegoat, which is, I think, going way too far. I do not think Gabe Kapler is being made to be a scapegoat. I think I know you guys agree there are reasons for the Phillies to make this change, but he's not the only problem. You know, there are other issues with this team right now. And with Matt Klentak now leading the search for the next manager, as John Middleton said in his news release, you know, I'm not buying that, first of all, Liz. I don't think that Matt Klentak did not want Gabe Kapler to be gone in the first place. So why would Matt Klentak then, you know, lead the search for a replacement to the player that he didn't, to the manager that he didn't want to see go in the first place? Klentak's also the guy who helped bring aboard John Mailey and Chris and force out Rick Kranitz and replace him with Chris Young. And Chris Young is now gone from his position after 1 year. Klentak does not exactly have
Things have gone so well, guys. Listen to all that.
I mean,
look at everything that has happened in 2 years.
That's quite a track record. And so I'm not buying the fact. I think this is a little bit of John Middleton trying to do some damage control with Matt Klentak and his the way the fans see him.
That's just PR speak. That's what you have to say. Whether or not it's true is, I mean, it's most likely not true. The process has almost certainly changed from what it was. I mean, my opinion, I'm pretty sure that they're giving him a list and saying you can add people to this list, and then we're bringing everybody in, and you're going to tell me at the end of all of this who you want to bring back, and I'll tell you who I want to bring back, and then we're going to compare notes, and then you're going to tell me who you want, and I'm going to hire someone. I feel like that's how it's going to be.
It's such a strange setup to have pretty much a full coaching staff, except for the most principal members and the pitching coach, hitting coach, and manager, already set up, waiting, you know, a package deal, waiting for a new manager to be slotted in.
Those are the biggest roles, though.
That's what I mean. It's just like the rest. The other roles are kind of what you hear about in the offseason getting like tossed aside, like, oh, the Phillies will not be bringing back, you know, the assistant bench coach, the outfield coach, the catching coach. But like all those guys, they're nailed down, are going to be there. But the, you know, the main ones are the ones we gotta figure out. We got to take a little longer here. So it's an interesting situation, and made more interesting by the fact that it took so long, and made more interesting by the fact that everybody who's, you know, I wrote this on Baseball Prospectus today, that Gabe Kapler being gone doesn't really change the way the Phillies are going to go about things.
Oh, no, they're going to maintain. I mean, when we're looking at another manager, you're not getting somebody who hates analytics. The Phillies have invested way too much time and way too much money.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but like the idea that another manager who maybe is less analytically slanted is going to come in here and be like, no more analytics, and they're going to stop doing that is absurd. And not just because Matt Klentak and this front office is driven in that regard, and, you know, good for them. The Phillies were behind in this regard for a while. But because analytics are just a part of baseball now. It's everywhere. Yeah. It is not going to go away. It's not a fad. It hopefully will taper off a little bit in the coming years and balance, you know, return to maybe something closer to even. But like, it's not going away. You know, Buck Showalter can't kick the door in and give Matt Klentak a swirly and end mathematics for the Philadelphia Phillies. That's just not going to happen.
Not anymore.
No, those days are gone. But it is fascinating. I want to get into the coaching staff changes because, like you mentioned, bench coach Rob Thompson will be back. So will first base coach Paco Figueroa, third base coach Dusty Wathan, infield coach Bobby Dickerson, catching coach Bob Stumpo, and Craig Driver.
Could there be a more appropriate name for a catching coach?
No, Bob Stumpo is exactly Stumpo. That's the name. When you're born, Bob Stumpo.
I hope they call him
Stumpy.
Stump.
Probably Stumpy. They put a Y on the end of everybody's
name
for nicknames.
They most assuredly call him that, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, man.
There's bullpen coach Jim Gott, assistant pitching coach Dave Lundquist, and assistant hitting coach Pedro Guerrero were all invited back. Now, again, listening to Salisbury's podcast, all these guys had options in their contract that needed to be picked up for next year. And what Salisbury was reporting is if a new manager comes in and really wants to make a change in any of these spots, the Phillies will likely cut a check to any or all of these guys, and the new manager will be able to kind of bring in other people that they choose. But I think all of these different guys did some good things last year. Thompson is a well-respected guy who was on the Yankees staff under Joe Girardi for a number of years. Wathan knows a lot of the young Phillies players. He was a very successful AAA manager. Paco Figueroa was in charge of the Phillies base running. That was much better this year.
Oh, yeah. So much improved.
It really was. I mean, a lot more first to thirds, a lot more second to homes this year. Fewer outs on the bases.
Running into outs at home, which was a huge issue.
Yeah, they did a much better job this year, and the catching coaches, obviously, with what JT Realmuto did behind the plate and how he improved as a pitch framer, those guys aren't going anywhere. Real quick, what do you guys make of the Phillies not renewing the contracts of the head athletic trainer, Scott Sheridan, who's been there forever? Assistant trainer Chris Mudd also is not coming back. Sheridan's been with the Phillies for 13 years. It seems like he's kind of like a fall guy for the injuries that went down this year. I don't know. It's impossible for us to know exactly how they all happened, what the training staff does, but very surprised to see that happen.
It seems, I don't know, man, for a guy who's been there for 13 years that like someone said the trainer's name and I was like, oh, I'm familiar with that person is crazy. It tells you how long he's been with the team, but it also just seems crazy that somebody who's been with a team that's as familial as the Phillies for that long is going to get blamed for injuries. He's not injuring the players. Was he just not helping them enough, rubbing the right creams on them? I don't understand.
I don't think he's being blamed exactly. I mean, he's been there for 13 years. I don't think it's completely crazy for them to want a new voice. And we know the Phillies aren't the same organization they were when David Montgomery was there. You know, things are a lot different. And, you know, I'm amazed that he lasted this far into the Klentak regime, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, so many other dudes have been changed out.
It could just be that the Phillies and under Klentak want to do something different with sports medicine than Sheridan is. Not well versed in or whatever, who knows, but yeah, it was interesting, I thought, but you're right, it's just about everybody else from the old regime is gone, and now he's just another one of them. Real quick before we get to break, let's double back on Klentak real quick, because a lot of what we're hearing from some people is that Klentak should have been fired too, and Andy McPhail should have been fired too. It's hard to argue against that line of thinking, because when you look at the decisions that have been made, when you look at the fact that Klentak hired Kapler, when you look at the team that Klentak put together, when you look at the way he handled the trade deadline and the way he handled the Dallas Keuchel situation, it's hard to also point to a lot of things that Matt Klentak has done right in his, how long has he been here now? 4 years, 5 years that he's been in the organization. You know, I wonder if John Middleton is really kind of taking the lead on this managerial search, Liz. How much power does Matt Klentak actually have? You know, obviously he's going to be on the hot seat for this year anyway, but how much leeway does he have now? And especially if they bring in a manager like Buck Showalter, he is not going to have the same kind of a relationship with Showalter or any other manager that they bring in that he had with Kapler. I just if I'm Matt Klentak, I don't know how much power or how much influence or how much weight he's going to have from this point moving forward.
I bet he doesn't quite know. I bet he doesn't know until he starts having to make decisions. I feel like it's just going to be, you know, I don't think it'll be too intense. I think it'll be John Middleton, not hovering, but like in the distance, just a large, tall shadow, like you're standing in a big spotlight, just the shadow cast over him at all times. You know, like every decision he makes, he'll make it, but I think Middleton's looking at all of them, and the ones that he doesn't, you know, that he likes or he doesn't care about are just going to go right through. But the ones that he cares about, I'm sure Klentak will be hearing about, and he'll have to, I feel like, more vigorously defend himself. Like, the autonomy, I feel like he still has some autonomy, but I also feel like John Middleton realized that Andy McPhail isn't really doing anything. Like, he hired him and said he's going to be autonomous, and I feel like maybe John Middleton thought that meant he's going to be checking in with him occasionally instead of just letting him go and then getting lost in the bowels of Citizens Bank Park for 2 months or something.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's with Andy McPhail, it almost seems as though he's just kind of not there, that John Middleton has had to kind of pick up the slack here.
I think that's what he realized.
Yeah, like, I guess I'm going to have to take control of this thing here. And John Middleton, Justin, is not a baseball ops guy. He's not a guy who's an owner who knows a lot about baseball, but he's not the guy you want making these decisions. And I'm sure that's why Middleton in his news in his press release said that it would be Klentak leading the search for a new manager, because who else is going to lead the search? There's I just don't know who to trust in this front office right now.
I think John Middleton wants to be beloved. I think we saw a sniff of that when he kind of stepped in and took out John Mailey and put in the, you know, already beloved Charlie Manuel in what was probably the most exciting trade deadline move the Phillies made.
And have made in probably 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, and, you know, now he's not going to be the hitting coach next year, so that's over.
So sad.
So John Middleton, I mentioned that how the Phillies apparently care about how they're perceived now. I think he's a big part of that. I do. I think he's most of it. I think he wants to be. John, you said you don't think that he made this decision just because of the fans, but I mean, what we've seen indicates that. I mean, again, that Scott Lauber piece characterized it as him delivering a pound of flesh to. I believe he characterized fans as a bloodthirsty horde or something. the word bloodthirsty was used, and also the phrase pound of flesh. So it was definitely, it's being characterized as, hey, the fans wanted this, you know, maybe the players didn't and the front office probably didn't, but John Middleton's like, oh, what do you want me to do? Fans want me to do this. It's almost like he's succumbing to peer pressure, and it's giving fans this power. If this is the case, it's giving fans this like influence that I've kind of like made fun of over the years, that sports radio hosts think that players and coaches can be run out of town, and it's just like, it's laughable. Like, what are we gonna do? Like, we're all just gonna go down to the stadium and be like, get out of here, and like players we don't like will be like, okay, I'll go, never mind, like contracts and that this is a business or whatever.
I'll pack my bags. Yeah,
but like, this kind of makes that more of a reality, which is not good.
No, that's not how you want the
you
decision
to be made. You
should not
be looking at Twitter polls to determine like moves like this, because again, removing Gabe Kapler will probably, you know, I don't know, removing Gabe Kapler and putting in somebody like Buck Showalter is gonna change something. It's gonna be different, but yeah, it's nothing organizationally, nothing fundamentally is going to shift, because Gabe Kapler's job, the reason he was hired was because of how much he subscribed to the way the Phillies do things. So that will be a change, but the way the Phillies do things won't be. And you know, that's what makes this so ornamental. It makes it feel like John Middleton's just like, well, if there's one move I can make that can make it look like we did something to make a change and that will appease people who keep saying I suck, it's it's firing Gabe Kapler. Because if they'd done nothing, they'd be blaming him, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. And you know, let's take a quick break and let's talk about who could potentially replace Gabe Kapler now that there actually is an opening. And I want to get your thoughts. I asked Paul Poirier this when he was with me on the podcast last week, to rank where you guys think the Phillies are in terms of the different managerial jobs that are open. How attractive is this job for somebody like Showalter or Girardi or Madden or somebody else? So we'll get into that up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So let's talk about some potential replacements for Gabe Kapler. Actually, before we do that, let me ask you a question. Where does Gabe Kapler go from here? Like, what's next for Gabe Kapler? Do you think he gets another managerial job? Do you think if he does, it happens next year, or do you think it's a couple years down the line? Does he go into broadcasting? Does he go into somebody's front office as an analytics guy? I think he's got a bright future in the game in some capacity. He's not going anywhere, but he's not going to John Felski, you know, his way into oblivion where nobody knows what happened to him after he got fired from the manager's job with the Phils back in the late 80s. But Justin, where do you see Gabe Kapler going for the next 2, 3, 4 years, something like that? I don't mean you don't have to map it all out, but, you know, do you think he gets another managerial job right away?
Let me unfurl my life scroll of Gabe Kapler.
I want you to do 8 consecutive Magic 8-Ball questions and then let us know how they turn out.
So I feel like Gabe Kapler is more likely to get a job outside of the dugout than in it, because once again, you can get a guy who is like, I believe in analytics and I know how to communicate with players. You can find another one of those guys. It doesn't have to be Gabe Kapler. I'm not saying it necessarily shouldn't, but why does it have to be? You know, yeah, he has 2 years of major league experience now, I guess, but I don't know. I just fail to see what the appeal is. If you're like, this team needs a new start, this team needs a new voice, this team needs a leader, and we're going to get Gabe Kapler, the guy who locked, you know, was part of this team that really didn't know anything what that was going on in the locker room, where we found out after the fact that somebody smashed a television because they were so upset. And there appears to be a, you know, from the outside, it's kind of easy to imagine that there's a little bit of dysfunction within this organization. So I don't know. I just don't see what the massive appeal of Gabe Kapler as a manager is that puts him above other people. I mean, that's kind of what I come back to. So, like, if you're somebody, I think we've heard the Giants. It's like they like Gabe Kapler. If you're the Giants, what does he do that's better than the other just people like with no experience like he had 2 years ago? Is it just that he goes into that interview and just interviews really well? Where like they interviewed Joe Madden or Joe Girardi for like 8 hours in Chicago. If you sit Gabe Kapler down for an 8-hour interview, he can probably talk the whole time and not use the same word twice. So is that what gets him over the top? So I don't know. I come back to what is it that makes Gabe Kapler so valuable as a manager? And I don't know what it is. I don't know what that is. You can get a manager who follows directives from the front office and subscribes to analytics, and it doesn't have to be him. So
it's a fair point. Liz, what do you think?
I think he's got a future. I don't feel like he's got experience. I don't feel like he's going to get another managerial job right away. I think he'll have to spend some time as a coach, maybe, or maybe he'll go back inside the front office. You know, he has experience now, but I don't know if this is like a highlight on his resume. I think it only is because it has to be, because this is only major league coaching experience. So,
yeah,
I feel like it's obvious to a lot of people why he was fired, now that he was fired, because if it had just been about on the field results, it would have been an easy decision, I think, because both his teams, 2018 and 2019, faltered down the stretch in an embarrassing way,
mm-hmm.
like hugely bad. And while some of that is on the players, a lot of it is on the manager to keep everybody moving, to keep everybody up, because both teams looked like they had just given up. And it's not just us that are saying that. That was said by beat writers and national writers.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like it's a, you know, this gets a gold star in his resume. I think it's here to show that he can do it at the major league level and not embarrass himself. I think he's going to spend time as a bench coach for a while.
I think the best place for Gabe Kapler right now, like, is in the kind of like what Chris Young is going to be doing, but maybe from a special assistant to the general manager or something like that, where you can be involved in some of the personnel decisions, like deeply involved in the personnel decisions and putting a team together and using the numbers and the analytics to help the managers and the coaches on the field side get everything together. But I'm with you guys. I don't think necessarily jumping in to another managerial role is going to happen right away, but I wouldn't doubt if it does happen again sometime, because you do, you know, those Terry Francona comparisons are not going away. And, you know, Terry Francona, when he left here, did not have a positive experience in Philadelphia. And then he went to Boston and won a couple of World Series, almost won another one with Cleveland. He might be going to the Hall of Fame. You know, people, there's always the intrigue of that. There's always that possibility that, okay, here's somebody who got their licks in for a couple of years. Maybe we wait a couple of years and, you know, he's a little bit older and wiser and now let's bring him on. But Justin, your point is well taken too, that, you know, there are other guys who can probably do what Gabe Kapler does. And, you know, does Gabe Kapler show enough in his next interview to separate himself from somebody else? And I guess we'll see, but I don't think it's going to be next season, because there are 8 jobs open, but there are a ton of managerial candidates out there for these different jobs. So let's talk about some of the people that have been linked to the Phillies. There have been a bunch of different articles and of different managers that could be coming to Philadelphia. But I think the name that everybody is kind of circling around is Buck Showalter. That seems to be the name that everybody's gravitating towards. In the days leading up to the firing, there had been multiple reports by Matt Gelb and Todd Zielecki and John Morosi that the Phillies and Buck Showalter had mutual interest in each other. Showalter spent a long time with the Rangers and the Yankees, had a lot of success there, had a lot of success with Baltimore before bottoming out a couple of years ago. You know, he's an interesting, he definitely would be different than Kapler. He's kind of a no-nonsense guy. He's a take-charge guy. He would certainly not let the players police themselves as much as Gabe Kapler did. The Phillies clearly want a manager with experience. They want a manager who knows how to handle a clubhouse, who's going to hold players more accountable than Gabe Kapler did. And Showalter has ties to a number of people in the Phillies front office. So, Liz, at first blush, with Buck Showalter and the history that he has and knowing what the Phillies front office is structured like and the players they have, what would you make of Buck Showalter being the next manager of this team?
That's a really good question.
Thank you.
I don't know.
I wrote it down earlier today all by myself.
I don't really know the answer to it. I don't know how I'd feel. I feel like he's the type of manager I would want. I don't really know a whole ton about him. I don't know if I've ever seen him smile, which is not, you know.
I'm looking at a picture of him scowling right now on Twitter.
He has he's got a real good baseball scowl, like a good dugout scowl.
Yeah.
He does not smile. I would love someone a little bit looser, but then again, who cares? Who cares what I want? Doesn't really matter. I want a guy who's going to make things work. And if the Phillies think he's it, he's worth a try. I would hopefully they'll be able to, if it's not working, they could pull the trigger faster and become known as the organization that fires their coaches. Fires their coaches and managers. What's the worst that could happen?
Well, the worst thing that could happen is you get another firing in another couple of years. But you're right. Showalter has a long track record.
Yeah.
And Justin, you know, you are a guy who's followed the Orioles for a number of years. And obviously you used to watch them when Showalter was the manager of that team. He's obviously been around he got his start long before the use of analytics came around. And I was looking around on the internet today, doing a Google search on Buck Showalter and analytics just to see if he's given interviews about what he thinks about analytics. And the sense that I get from the different interviews, and I looked at a Fangraphs interview and a couple other different interviews that are on my timeline. It seems like he knows the analytics are out there. He listens to it. He learns about it. He understands what they do, but he also understands the human element of the game. He talks about one play. He's talking about Adam Jones recently, where he talked about how Adam Jones is kind of special when it comes to reading a ball off the bat and scoring from second. And, you know, where some analytics might say not to send a runner in that situation, you might do it with Adam Jones because that player does things differently and stuff like that. There are things in the game that you can't quantify that are not purely analytical, and he seems to be, based on just the little bit that I've read, seems to me to be a guy who will use information when he thinks it's worth using, but isn't going to be a slave to the spreadsheet, and, you know, that might be what the Phillies are looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of not been subtle about that being the kind of manager I would like to see get a shot in Philadelphia, especially when it seemed like the Phillies had a very tunnel vision approach to how they were going to go about analytics. You know, I remember being very relieved, as we all were, and kind of stunned to hear Andy McPhail, when he was hired, talking in a press conference about using modern statistics and analytics with the Phillies, because they had not been at the forefront of that movement for so long. I repeat myself a lot, so I'm sure this is not new information, but like I believe there is a middle ground to be reached, and I'm not saying Buck Showalter is that guy, but based on the interview you're talking about, John, based on quotes he has about it, based on the common sense and baseball experience he seems to have, he is someone who fits that description. You know, it's tough to say a manager is every time a manager is fired, you kind of bring up the argument of, okay, but what is it a manager even does? And
Our manager's overrated. You know, right. I've seen that a lot too. Yeah.
Like, what is the job here? I mean, with Gabe Kapler, we talk about what we didn't like about some of his moves, and you know, his supporters say, like, well, a lot of the stuff people are mad about weren't his fault. But at the same time, so then what do you give him credit for? Like, if the bad things aren't his fault, then maybe some good things aren't, you know, he doesn't get credit for them. I don't know. It's right. Like, what exactly, where is the window where a manager lives? And I know it can change from manager to manager. I don't know. Buck Showalter just seems like he does live in that middle ground, and he's got that connection, obviously, to Andy McPhail, going back to Orioles organizational ties. So, yeah, it seems at the moment that's not an unrealistic choice, and somebody who I think could steer the Phillies in a more even-handed direction. But again, it just, like I said, it raises more questions, because Buck Showalter is not somebody that Matt Klentak's going to be able to influence in the dugout. If Matt Klentak would rather see something happen and Buck Showalter would rather see something else happen, the guy making the decision in-game is going to get his way.
Yeah.
So it's a little confusing. It just makes this move even more confusing. So I wouldn't hate Buck Showalter getting a shot. I know some people would. But I think there's just a lot of strong feelings there about the direction of this team and what they use to reach the playoffs again. So,
yeah, well, let me read some other names here. And Joe Maddon has been mentioned, obviously, but he's going to be interviewing in a couple other different places. It seems like Anaheim is the place that is going to end up with Maddon, but we'll kind of see how that goes. Joe Girardi, former Yankees manager,
Girardi isn't broadcasting anymore. I believe his broadcasting gig ended tonight when the Astros beat the Rays. So he's going to go, I believe, interview with the Mets.
Yeah,
they kept needling him about it for most of the game, and you could kind of tell he'd sort of explicitly said, "Hey, let's not." And AJ Pierzynski, because he's a douche, just kept needling him with it. Like, where will you be going? Will it be, you know, Chicago? Will it? I'm just like, shut up. No one.
Well. No, I highly doubt it'll be Philadelphia. It sounds like New York or Chicago for Girardi, but
they didn't even mention Philadelphia at all.
No, they didn't. Raul Labañez has been mentioned as a possibility. He's a guy without any managerial experience. I don't think the Phillies are going back down that road. Dusty Baker. Somebody mentioned Bruce Bochy, who is retiring. I just think that dude's retiring. He's just going to retire. And
can you imagine? No,
he wants to manage again. It's not the Phillies aren't that team, and I think they know it.
Frankly, San Diego would be perfect. Stay out west.
Oh my God, that would be terrible for all the fans involved. But I would like to see Raul Labañez get a shot at hitting coach. I know he doesn't have any experience, but hitting coaches are interchangeable. So what could it hurt?
Hitting coach is totally fine. Yeah, I love the idea of Raul Labañez being involved.
Yeah.
You know, we all love the idea of all those guys from that era getting involved in some kind.
Ibanez has such a great reputation. He's such a positive dude. He's wonderful. I'd love to see him. He's just a guy I think that would work well with the players, not be overbearing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I like Ibanez. I don't like Ibanez as a manager for this particular team, but hitting coach for sure, I think I would be on
like
board with.
I like Ibanez as the hitting coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like Utley as, I'm going to say, bench coach, because he doesn't have to talk as much. I think bench coaches do a lot of glowering with the occasional outburst.
The occasional top step tirade.
I want Jimmy in there, not with any official position, just kind of mingling.
An Ichiro type job. He can be in the dugout with the uniform.
Right. And then I want Shane watching everybody's kids. I think that'd be a great job for him.
I think what the Phillies need is they need a power guru, and Ryan Howard would fit right in there. Just somebody to teach power. I think that's what they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that can be taught.
Can be taught. Yeah. Just Ryan saying, just hit home runs.
Swing
harder. You know, what's the problem here?
Well, the third deck is right there, guys. Yeah, it's much closer than you think.
A couple other names to think about. John Farrell. Phil Nevin is a guy who the Phillies interviewed a couple of years ago. They liked him. Wouldn't be surprised to hear him get another interview with the team. He has a lot of minor league managerial experience. Mike Socha, no thank you, but his name is going to be mentioned because he's from here. Freddie Gonzalez apparently threw his hat into the ring for the Phillies job.
No,
no thank you on that one.
Pass. Pick that hat back up.
Who was that again? I missed it.
Freddie Gonzalez, former Braves manager.
Who was fired
for yelling at Hanley Ramirez once.
Right.
Fired for looking too much like Garth Brooks.
Yeah. Yeah.
John, I'm pretty sure, I had to Google it, but John Felsky is still alive.
He is still alive. I think so. Yeah. That's right.
I'm so glad because that got real dark there. That was real, real dark.
I didn't mean to go off on John Felsky like that. Obviously, a guy I have a lot of affection for, but he was, he stopped managing the Phillies and then he just like disappeared. I mean, I know he wasn't abducted or anything like that, but it was just kind of interesting that, some managers, they stick around the game and they bounce around and do different things like Charlie Manuel, and others just poof. Like, where did Nick Leyva go? Oh, no, that's right. Nick Leyva was the third base coach for the Blue Jays in the 93 World Series. I forgot about that. So, even Nick Leyva managed to stick around and do some other things. Anyway, I digress. And then a couple of in-house candidates, Rob Thompson and Dusty Wathan. I got to tell you, I'm intrigued by Dusty Wathan.
Sure.
Still, I am.
I still am. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why, I am.
Yeah. It's just funny because we were like, oh, he'd be a great manager because he's managed so many of these guys.
Nope, and not now anymore.
So many of those guys just flamed out. It was now like, oh, gone. Man.
No more Aaron Altair. No more Nick Williams. Roman Quinn's kind of, is he there really? Dylan Cousins never made the majors. So, yeah. But I think Dusty Wathan is an interesting choice. He's had a lot of success in the minors. But obviously, I think the Phillies want to go with someone with more experience. Do you guys have a favorite at this point, or is it still just kind of too early for a favorite at this point? Because my favorite is probably Showalter.
I don't know if I have a favorite. I kind of need to see, I could pick a dude, but if the Phillies don't even interview him, I'm going to be sad. So I'd kind of rather wait to see what path they're going down. I wouldn't be sad about Girardi, honestly. I think he's good. I think he got the short shrift from the Yankees. I think they just wanted to fire him, and then everyone said, oh, he's all angry and gruff all the time. No one likes him. I don't think that was probably true. But I would like to see him get a shot. But I also like Showalter a lot. Please let them interview at least one of those guys.
I think that's definitely going to happen. I think John Middleton's going to throw a ton of money at whoever they really want, and because that doesn't go against the luxury tax. You can pay a manager as much money as you want, and I think Middleton's going to identify their number one target and give him more money than anyone else. And then it's just a matter of how attractive is the Phillies as a destination. And this will be the last thing we chat about here tonight. There are 8 openings in Major League Baseball right now, and I was kind of wondering where you think the Phillies fit in among the 8 teams who are now looking for managers. And so let me give you my list, and then you guys can tell me where you think the Phillies slot in. Of the 8 openings, I have the Phillies at number 4. I have the Padres at 1. I have the Cubs at 2. I have the Mets ahead of the Phillies at 3. The Phillies at 4. The Angels at 5. Giants 6. Royals 7. Pirates 8. I just think the Padres are easily the best destination. They've got a ton of talent. It's a great place to live and work. I think the Cubs, they have in Theo Epstein, a general manager who's won a couple World Series. That's a team that always wants to win. They're never going to be rebuilding. I think there is talent there, although how long some of that talent's going to be there is a question. So it's not as attractive a place as it might have been, say, a year or two ago. With the Mets, man, I hate admitting that I think the Mets is a better job given the Mets' front office structure, but frankly, the Phillies' front office structure is not exactly wowing me at the moment, and I think the Mets have more young talent. I think the Mets have more pieces to build on at the moment. I mean, I think right now the Phillies are the 4th best team in this division pretty clearly, and so I would put the Mets slightly ahead of the Phillies, and then, with the Angels, you've got Trout and Ohtani, but that's really all you've got, and the Angels are just generally always irrelevant. The Giants, they're going to be bad for 2 or 3 years. That's a great place.
At least.
But right now,
their farm system is terrible.
It's a terrible, they're going to be, they're years away from being close to competing. That's why I have them so low. And then the Royals and Pirates are terrible jobs. So where do you have the Phillies among the 8, among the 8 spots? Justin, let me ask you first.
I'm going over this in my head. I don't want to give the same answer as you, but 4th is such a healthy spot. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, the easiest.
It's not a hot take, I know, but it's it's where I, I think it's where they slot here. Yeah.
The easiest ones to point out are definitely like that the Royals want to go with Matheny is an indication of how dumb a job that is, and that deserves to be the least.
Why would Mike Matheny get another job? Why would that happen? They don't want to look outside the state.
They have no idea what they're doing.
It's that they don't have a team that's going to be ready for another decade, and they just changed owners. So I mean, they're going to hire him because he's pure. He's a Ron Garden hire. He's not there to make the team win. He's there just to make sure no one dies. He's there to make sure no one gets hurt.
Yeah, are you sure he's the man for that job, though?
I know. It would be great if they could go to someone else, but the Royals are a famously closed-minded organization when it comes to worldview.
Yes.
And Mike Matheny matches because he wrote a book that was about, I think, about his faith, essentially. And so, he's completely up their alley because Dayton Moore ran a workshop about how porn is evil. They're a match made in heaven. There's really no other manager they could choose, if I'm being honest. Who else
That's
would
fair.
Want that job? No one.
Yeah, I mean, when I said they have no idea what they're doing, I guess what I meant was they have exactly the idea of what they're
it's
doing.
It's just terrible and sad.
Honestly, they're nailing it. I think the Royals are the least valuable. And, yeah, it's tough not to view the Padres as number one. If you're thinking, like, okay, I'm a manager and I want to inherit this team that is good but isn't good now, because then I can get credit for them, you know, being the manager of this team that became good, you know, that's not an opportunity that's available every offseason, but the Padres have the potential to be that opportunity. So that probably is number one. But I got to view the Cubs as still, if you're somebody who isn't sickened by the spotlight, I mean, that might be what's going on with Joe Maddon. Like, you know, you say the Angels are irrelevant every season. That's true. You don't go to the Angels unless you're thinking, I can't wait to be bothered less, or I'm going to make this team relevant. I think either case could be Joe Maddon's thinking on the decision to go to Anaheim. But in any case, I still view, and everyone should still view, the Angels as a pretty much irrelevant organization for now. So I have the Cubs pretty high then. I feel like they're at number two. The Mets, you know, the Mets like always seem like they have some good players, and they have more than some good players now than even a couple of years ago. Just a lot of exciting young arms, even with the young pitching staff that was supposed to be terrifying, somewhat depleted at this point. I don't know. I mean, I love Pete Alonso.
How could you
love
not?
That guy. It sucks how many NL East young players are awesome right now that aren't on the Phillies, and he's one of them. So, I see value in them in the Mets job as well, which is stunning to say, because as soon as you take that job, knight, you know, one of those, like, you're going to be in a museum and like a knight's armor is going to come to life and lop your head off with a sword, and just because you're affiliated with the Mets now. I that kind of makes me put the Phillies at number four, because the Giants, like you said, they're still going to be tumbling around in the dryer for a little bit. Pirates are kind of nothing, and the Royals are kind of nothing. So I guess that's kind of where you got to slot them in.
I have them, I can't put them higher than four, but I also reject the notion that the Mets job is more attractive than the Phillies. Mm-hmm. Because I think that Brody Van Wagenen is, he's just a tiny dictator. And I don't, judging by how angry he allegedly got when Mickey Callaway didn't follow his instructions, I'm sure... I don't know if there's like a secret manager network, if there's like a message board they all go on when the season's over, if they text each other or something, or if they even talk at all. But I feel like it has to have been heard through the grapevine that he's not great, and the Mets will not give you what you need to work with, even if you have all the raw pieces. Because they had a chance this year. They had a real chance with all of their players. Pete Alonso had an otherworldly season. And they blew it because a combination of bad managing, but that Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz trades, that handcuffed them before the season even started. And so I can't put them above, but who else do I put above them? Like I just, can they be tied for fourth? Let's have them tied for fourth. Because I can't imagine someone would want that job more. In addition, because the Mets will not pay. They will not give a big name manager the money he deserves. They're not shelling out money for Girardi. They're not going to do it. I think Mickey Callaway is making, I think he made barely more than the MLB minimum salary.
I honestly, I think there's something, an interesting experiment to be run, just comparing Matt Klentak and Brody Von Wagenen, because I think they're trying to do the same thing in different ways. But also the thought occurred to me, yeah, Brody got really upset when Mickey Callaway did something he didn't want, but I don't think we ever had a moment where Gabe Kapler did something Matt Klentak didn't want. So maybe Matt Klentak's got just as big a temper, and we just don't know about it, which would just be an excellent development.
Oh, I was just going to say, give the man a personality. My God.
Let him, let him show a little emotion or something other than, you know, utter disgust.
I want an angry, roided out turtle. I can't stop thinking about that now.
Yeah. So, yeah, it sucks that the conclusion here is just kind of like, eh, but it's kind of where we're at. This is, do you think it's fair to call Gabe Kapler being fired a half measure?
Yeah. Like, what else do you call it?
Exactly. Like, this isn't an organizational shift. This isn't a philosophical change. This is just kind of changing out the guy who is wearing, who is the front office, but wearing the uniform.
They want to see if changing him out will work. I think John Middleton is just giving it all one more try before he cleans house completely. Because if they have a bad year next year, he's no excuse.
What do you think he talked about when he, you know, reportedly was going on his soul searching journey to talk to different members of the organization about this decision? Do you think he was talking to them about whether or not they'd want Kapler to come back? Or do you think that he was asking them how they'd react if he fired him? Like, what was that about?
We got an interesting tweet about this, you know, our fan in Ireland, Scotland. I'm embarrassed now. I think his name is O'Sheen.
That is his name.
Hello. Because I know he's listening. But
terrible. Terrible. Good Lord.
I'm the worst. I'm really the worst. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. But he suggested that maybe when Middleton went to visit the players, that maybe he was asking them, hey, is it okay if I fire Gabe Kapler? Would you be angry? Would you leave? Would you not sign an extension with us? Would that make you, dear JT, would that make you less likely to sign an extension with us? Check yes or no.
That's the only place I'd fly my plane to and ask that question.
And as soon as I saw that, I'm like, that's brilliant. Of course it's brilliant. I mean, that's exactly, I don't know how. I just didn't think of that. I think that could be what he was doing. I'm sure that was part of the questions. That had to be, because it's like, the decision is mine, and if I decide I'm going to let him go, he's going. So would you be upset if I made that decision?
Yeah, you go to JT and ask that question, because anything that makes JT not want to be in Philadelphia is something
you don't do.
You don't do.
He is the most important thing now.
Imagine them doing this and then him leaving.
Why would you say that? Oh my God.
What a disaster. What an utter atrocity.
I'm so angry. So angry I have to even think about that.
Well, we finally have a resolution on Gabe Kapler, and obviously I think everybody is ready to move on to the next era here, and we'll see who that is over the next few weeks, and hopefully not months, but with the way this team moves, we'll see. But that'll do it for episode number 237 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin Clue and Liz Rocher for being on the podcast and giving you this emergency edition of the podcast. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.